Good afternoon, and welcome back to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape Machinery is located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, and they have everything John Deere, from tractors to mowers, implements. They've got it all. Go up and see them. They also handle the Honda product line, so they've got push mowers, generators, all that good stuff, and the steel products, weed trimmers, edgers, chainsaws. They got it all in stock. Go by and see them, or give them a call at 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. There you go. All right.
Bill's trying to turn the tables on me, giving me the old dead air point. I like it. Two can play at this game.
Oh, yeah.
Today is April 25th, 2021. Interestingly enough, we just got done speaking with Dr. Shizong Chen regarding the Falun Gong, and I kind of ended the show with, hey, we should do a show about political correctness. So I said to myself, well, there was no time to say it on actual air. We're actually talking about that right now. Because the name of the book that our guest has written is, here we go, The Dictatorship of Woke Capital, How Political Correctness Captured Big Business. Imagine that. So good old Dr. Chen, kind of a prophet. Very interesting.
Yeah.
So our guest, Stephen Sokup, we've never talked to him before, but our friend Stephen Manfredi sent him our direction, and that's how we find all these interesting people that we might never meet. Kind of great. I hope you really enjoy it. All these little inserted hour breaks here with people that have written really interesting things, and we hope they get a lot of wide readership. He's the senior commenter, vice president, and publisher of the Political Forum, an independent research provider. Imagine we've never met him before. That just seems wrong. They deliver research and consulting services to the institutional investment community with an emphasis on economic, social, political, and geopolitical events likely to have an impact on the financial markets in the United States and abroad. He's also the director of the Political Forum Institute, a nonprofit educational organization dedicated to creating and preserving community, primarily among those who earn their living and create wealth for the nation through the capital markets. Oh my gosh, we could use more people like this. You know, actually turning this around. He is a frequent media guest who's appeared on major radio, well, like this one, of course, and television programs nationwide. He's and the author of the new book, The Dictatorship of Woke Capital. Stephen, where have you been? Every time you turn on the news, there's some company that's done something stupid. I'm assuming that you're telling them to stop doing it?
Yes, in part.
Gosh, I mean, I hope your voice is magnified a million times, because
you and me both.
Good Lord, I mean, it's just so distressing to watch our businesses. It's one of those things where before you go buy anything, you almost have to do, it's like, oh, well, I better go look and make sure they haven't done anything bad today, because I don't want to give them my money. There's hardly any place to shop anymore. You're going to have to
I wonder how many people even think about that when they go and buy products anymore.
I don't know.
I'm hoping more and more.
I get a boycott list like every 2 minutes in my email. I don't think people are being all that shy about it. But what prompted this whole thing? Because I'm sure you didn't write the book last week when all this stuff hit the fan. I mean, you've been at this for a while.
I have been at this for a while. I'm very, very fortunate, though, in that my publisher had the wise sense to publish it right at the perfect time. I have worked in the financial services industry at the nexus of finance and politics for my entire professional career for about 25 years. I started out in the business as a Washington analyst at a big brokerage house, and then moved to another big brokerage house to do the same thing, and found that my voice was being limited. I was not able to tell my clients the truth, to speak important things that I thought they needed to know. And so my boss and I decided that we'd start our own firm. He's now my semi-retired business partner, but we've been in business as independent research providers for 18 years. And over the past decade or so, I've noticed just how dramatically Wall Street has shifted to the political left. This has become a much more significant issue over the past 5 years or so. And so when I started poking around and digging and trying to put my finger on the causes and the explanations and the possible ramifications, it's then that I stumbled upon essentially what we call woke capital, which is the way that our capital markets are essentially governed right now, and the way that business is being pushed further and further to the political left.
I don't know, maybe we just didn't notice it for a long time.
Yeah, when do you think this actually started? I mean, it obviously didn't start last week. They've been kind of lining up for this, or are they just so in tune with public awareness that, you know, they just switched right over?
Or they've hired so many millennials that are now in charge. I don't know.
Well, I would say this has really been a significant issue since about 2016. The people who are, you know, tacitly in charge of this are not stupid. They are very smart, and they pick their targets very carefully. And one of the targets that they've picked is the state of Georgia. This is not the first time that American big business has targeted Georgia for passing legislation that it disapproves of. In 2016, the state passed a religious freedom bill, which was intended to protect those who objected to same-sex marriage and things like that. And big business descended on the state and threatened the governor that if you sign this law, you will lose a ton of business. He backed down. He vetoed the law, and basically he set the stage for how business would treat Georgia going forward.
And why would business be against that? What's the point?
The point mostly is just to flex its muscle. Mm-hmm. Most of American business receives pressure from at least one of three sources, and probably all three, and that's pressure from the bottom up, which is workers, as you mentioned, hiring millennials who are woke, who pressure the company to do what they expect them to do politically. Their pressure comes from the top down, which is people in the C-suites who are themselves very arrogant and very confident in their own political beliefs and want to push their companies further and further to the left, and thus they pressure the company. And then a great deal of pressure comes from the outside in, and that comes from activists or activist investors or activist shareholders. And so most of these companies believe that they can do this type of thing, that they can get away with injecting their politics into their business function or using their business to affect politics without any ramifications.
Yeah, because I noticed one of the things you didn't mention was the actual consumer.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. The consumer is a secondary or tertiary concern for a lot of these people.
Wow.
But yeah, in 2019, the Georgia legislature passed a fetal heartbeat law or a fetal heartbeat bill. The bill went to Governor Kemp, who was the new governor at the time, and big business, mostly entertainment companies, led in large part by Bob Iger and Disney, said, hey, and if you want to know how this is, you know, get confused about business and, you know, how laws are bad for business, Bob Iger said, if you pass this law limiting abortion, that will be bad for Disney's business. And so we will have to move our business out of the state. Now, try and make sense of that.
Yeah.
But Governor Kemp pushed back, and he signed the law. Unfortunately, what happened, or fortunately, I guess, you know, for the business leaders, is that law went to court, and so it was thrown out in court. So they never had to follow through on their threats. But they've been targeting Georgia for 5 years, and they target Georgia in large part, I think, because it's an easy state to target. They can lampoon the good old boys and say, oh, look, this is a state with a significant minority population, but these good old white boys are controlling this and pushing them around. So I think that Georgia has been their focus because it's easy for them to lampoon the Republicans in Georgia and to make their stand there.
So it's the It's the investors, the woke workers that are actually putting the pressure on these big companies.
And you would think that that would be pretty easy to say, hey, look, we make shoes or, you know, whatever we make. We're not in the business of
politics, yeah.
Yeah, of policymaking.
You would think so, but, you know.
I think that'd be like shoes, a short conversation.
Just, you know, I do my usually weekly scan of the news wires to find stories on ESG and sustainability and all of these environmental issues that companies are being pushed toward. And Rolling Stone has a story out yesterday on the 10 best sustainable shoe brands. Companies are being pushed in this direction from everyone. It's not just a passing fad, and it's not just something that comes from one area of our society. It's something that's being pushed on business by a number of different entities, a number of different players who are all pressuring business to make changes to the way they function, which is, you know, a real serious risk to our entire economy.
Well, sure, I would. Now, so you know, we hear all this noise about boycotting. Okay, so you have a consumer base out there that goes, "Hey, wait a minute, we're not going for this. We're not going to buy those products anymore." You think that has an effect on the folks that are actually applying the pressure or to turn it around, or are they just going to weather the storm and wait for people to stop thinking about it and go back to business as usual?
No, I don't think it has any effect whatsoever on them. For example, when Nike pushes Colin Kaepernick out there and has him veto the Betsy Ross flag, they get a lot of pushback from conservative talk radio and Tucker Carlson and a lot of people saying, hey, we hate this, we don't like this, we're going to boycott Nike. But for Nike's target audience, not only is Colin Kaepernick being involved a plus, but the pushback is a plus. So Nike's not hurting from this. Nike, you know, the conservative boycott doesn't hurt Nike at all.
Darn it.
The same goes for Coca-Cola. Coca-Cola goes out there and makes a big deal about the voting rights law in Georgia. And people say, hey, we're not going to buy Coca-Cola. What are your choices? Well, Pepsi. Pepsi's worse. Pepsi is a much more significant and a much more offensive political player than Coca-Cola has been over the past 5 to 10 years. So conservative boycotts have, in general, don't work because people tend to abandon them pretty quickly. Conservatives
right.
have a habit of abandoning the boycotts, but also because it's difficult. I mean, it's hard to find a company that you would choose to give your money to as a consumer that is going to be aligned with your political values at this point.
Yeah, like Target was pretty easy to boycott. You know, they kind of, for me, they were one of the early offenders, and I haven't darkened their door in, I don't know, what, 15 years, 20
yes.
years?
Yeah.
I would go to Target if they were the last store on Earth.
Doesn't look like they've been hurt much by it, though. They're still there.
I don't even drive through their parking lot.
Yeah, so it, you know, that begs the question, you know, when you have these woke companies getting involved in politics, you know, obviously the consumer isn't going to have much to say about it. What is the kickback on that? What do you do?
Well, I think that what anybody, not just conservatives, but anybody who objects to the political weaponization of capital or the weaponization of business for political purposes, what they should do is to look at what the left has done and reverse engineer what they've done and make that sort of a focus on pushing companies back the other direction. And what I mean by that mostly is that the left has been the squeaky wheel for the past 10, 15, 20 years in American business, and they've gotten greased. What consumers, what investors, what independents and conservatives need to do is to push back. They need to squeak a little bit as well.
I think people are getting to that point where it's like they're really starting to flail. Like, all right, we got to figure something out. We have to take a really quick break. Speaking of consumerism. We're a little advertising break here. We'll be right back. Our guest is Stephen Sokup. He has written a book about woke capital. Imagine that, how political correctness captured big business. And I do think that if this is a new idea for you, you should listen to our show more often. You can find 10 years of archives to catch you up on what's been going on in the world, I guess, at wethepeopleradio.us.
Foot of Old Glory, and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the Great Compromise.
Hey, so Stephen, Your lovely publicist, he always sends me a list of questions, which, you know, I'm not very good at taking directions, so I promptly disregard. But I did look at them during the break. And, you know, for people who maybe aren't speaking the lingo of today's modern, you know, all this vernacular, define woke capital for people. That actually was a really good question. I should not have disregarded.
Well, the way in which I define woke capital is that it's a it's an anti-democratic, top-down strategy being used by some of the biggest and best-known names in American business to change the way business functions, to change the definition of capitalism, and most importantly, to change the relationship between the citizens and the state permanently.
Mm. Okay, so it's a cultural, basically a cultural movement.
Very much so.
Okay.
And then he has on here, what is the ESG movement? And actually, I don't know what that is either.
Okay. ESG stands for Environmental, Social, and Corporate Governance Investing. And that's probably the hottest trend there is in the investment world in North America and in Europe, and has been for the past couple of years. Literally tens of billions of dollars every year being dumped into this movement.
Which, the green blackmail.
Yes, it pushes corporations to embrace strategies for planning for a zero carbon future and strategies planning for very superficial definitions of diversity being mandated upon them. And it pushes for a whole host of issues that are almost strictly political, but has chosen to inject them into the financial services world, into our capital markets, into the way our businesses are financed.
That makes sense. I mean, it sucks, but it makes sense.
Right.
So Bill had a thought during the break about, like, targeting.
Yeah, I heard. I don't know who it was. I was listening to somebody, one of the famous talking heads last week, and they were talking about the boycotting of these major corporations. And their theory was, don't go out and boycott 15 big corporations all at the same time because it's ineffective and it won't work. They were saying people need to boycott one particular corporation until it has an effect on them. And then once that happens, the rest of them will look at that and go, hey, they kind of ganged up on Coca-Cola or whatever. I don't want that to happen to me. Do you think that's a valid point?
It's a half-valid point.
Okay.
It's similar to a strategy that I personally advocate myself. But instead of boycotting, I advocate engaging. Engage with the company. that's how the left has gotten the grease as the squeaky wheel, by engaging them. But that said, if we were to, say, target one company and found all of the conservative or apolitical shareholders in that company to target one member of the board of directors, and we went to the annual general meeting or attended the annual general meeting online and voted our shares to remove that director, that would be an enormous message. Most efforts to remove a director from a board of directors gets like 1 or 2% positive votes. They're almost always retained with huge margins. But if we all focused on one company and one director and targeted them and said, hey, look, this is how we're going to engage. This director is a problem because they won't rein in the CEO who is pushing politics instead of business, then we could have a very, very serious impact. Then that director becomes, you know, the man in the cement shoes who gets thrown into the, you know,
right.
who's the warning to everybody else that this is, we're coming after you in the way that they have come after you. We're going to target you where it hurts. And I think that would be a much more effective strategy by engaging with the companies. Because if we boycott, then we'd leave the playing field. Then we'd leave the field to those who would use capital markets for political reasons. And so I don't believe in boycotting, not just because of the effectiveness, but because it leaves the playing field open for those who have nefarious plans.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
I think engaging, but at the same time focusing, would be a fantastic idea. The question is, how do you organize that? How do you put that together? Things
right.
like that. But I like I said, I think that's a half right strategy.
Yeah. Has boycotting ever worked? I mean, I can't think of any situation where, you know, it may have had an immediate effect, but not a long lasting effect.
No, I don't think that. Certainly, on the conservative side, I don't think that any conservative boycotts have ever worked. I know that there was a lot of initial celebration about Dick's Sporting Goods when Dick sort of unilaterally said we're not going to sell guns anymore because of what happened in Florida with the high school shooting. And conservatives said, well, we'll just boycott. And Dick's lost money over the next quarter and, I believe, over the next year. But that didn't hold, and Dick's is still just fine, and nobody even remembers, for the most part, that
right.
was ever even an issue.
Right. Yeah, that's what I've always experienced with boycotts, is they make a lot of noise for a little while, and then people go back to business as usual.
I don't think people really do it, though. That's my take. I think people are a little bit on the weak-willed side, and I don't think they necessarily stick with it. But I do get your point, because the other guys are really, really vocal. And I'm not sure that conservatives are organized in a way to go lean on companies, necessarily.
Right. If you take, for example, you know, we were just talking about the definition of ESG. If you were to take the three biggest passive asset management firms in this country, they're BlackRock, which has about $9 trillion in assets under management, Vanguard, which has about $7 trillion, and State Street that has about $5 trillion. So together, they control about $20 trillion in ETFs, so in passive funds, which means that they have usurped for themselves the shareholder voting rights of all that $20 trillion. And what they have done, all three of these companies have said that even their non-ESG funds are going to be aligned with ESG values, particularly sustainability. So now we have these three corporations which hold, you know, that $20 trillion amounts to about 18 to 28% of every single company on the S&P 500.
Wow.
So now we're starting at at least a 20 to 25% deficit of companies that are pushing politics from the left on corporations, and so we have to make up that difference. We have to sustain some sort of organization to push back on that, starting at such a deficit, because that's the way that they have organized the game, and that's how late we are to the game and how far behind we are in it.
Hmm. Just sad. Just having a moment of sadness here.
Well, you know, it's funny because
it's just crazy. How did this happen?
You know, what limited knowledge I have of business, I think you have to make sales. That's the lifeblood of your business is your bottom line. You've got to sell product. And if you don't sell product, then your share price is going to go down. Everything's going to go down. But it's sad that the actual consumer has so little impact on that.
Yeah, it is sad, but that's the way that American business is at this point, where investors, particularly large institutional and passive investors, are among their biggest clientele. The irony is that the ESG movement is virtually interchangeable with what they call the stakeholder model of business, or the stakeholder economic model, which claims that business exists to support all sorts of different stakeholders, not just the shareholders, that it's supposed to be there to support the environment and the workers and the consumers and, you know, whole different host of people. And that's what the ESG claims to be after, and yet the shareholders, the large shareholders are the ones who are benefiting, while the consumers are the ones who essentially get the shaft in the whole thing.
Sure.
Well, pulling out of these, they're moving their companies out of certain states and different things like that. I mean, I'm curious. It would seem like the cost-benefit wouldn't bear that out, you know, this moving of offices and people and all that just because of their politics.
Well, I don't think it probably does, and I don't think we've seen any companies do that necessarily. You probably have seen quite a few move from California to Texas for opposite reasons, because in California,
that's going to benefit them huge.
Exactly. But that's one where there's a tangible benefit to them. But you know, for example, Bob Iger talked a big game about moving business out of Georgia, and yet he never did. So I think it's mostly threats that come from a lot of these companies about moving business out. Now some of the threats, like Major League Baseball, can follow through on a threat, and the NCAA can follow through on threats, and things like that. But most major business, you know, they have sunk costs in those states, which means that for the most part, they're just flapping their gums and trying to convince people that they're going to do something that they're not.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, because that's true. I didn't go back and check. You know, I didn't look and make sure their address changed.
Well, yeah, but you look at companies like United and Coca-Cola. I mean, they're not moving out of Georgia.
No, well, it's everywhere.
Yeah.
So from the inside looking out, the people that work in that system, are they not necessarily for the specific companies, but in an industry like yours that sort of deals with a broad base of companies? Are people frustrated with this, or do they, I mean, is this just the new normal and they're fine with it?
I think you probably get about half and half. Some who think that this is fantastic and that this is the way that we can all have business reflect our values and that there's no downside to it. And then there are others who look to the future and see that eventually the Fed's going to have to stop printing money and businesses are going to have to start earning business again, and stock shares are going to drop of companies that don't focus on business and are concerned of the way that this is going to change the way business functions and whether or not it's going to American business is going to continue to be the engine of economic growth in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a scary thought.
Yeah, it's a very scary thought.
Yeah, because we've always really felt that the rise and fall of our country was on the exercise of free market, and now it seems like the free market has to go through the tunnel of political correctness before they can come out and be
play ball, and
be the free market, which at that point they're not. They're like the hostage market.
It's not just the tunnel of political correctness, but it's a tunnel of political correctness and arrogance coupled with Gnosticism, coupled with hypocrisy. Because all you know, the irony in all of this is that all of these companies, these very woke companies, be they asset management firms or consumer firms or electronic firms, they're all also very heavily invested in the People's Republic of China.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Apple is the wokest company in the world, and I just saw a thing about how they have created a new $300 million sustainability fund in this country. And yet, at the same time, Apple is virtually tied at the hip to the Chinese Communist Party. What's good for Apple is good for the Chinese Communist Party, and what's good for the Chinese Communist Party is good for Apple. And so the hypocrisy here is very rank, and it's you know, it belies the fact that these woke CEOs have you know, a great deal of unwarranted arrogance in their own abilities to control somebody like, you know, Xi Jinping.
Yeah, right.
Which is something that I think they're mistaken about.
Right.
Well,
right.
It's interesting because the all of the you know, the idiotic green stuff, most of those things are going to price, I mean, a lot of what these companies do, out of business. They're going to wake up one day and say, oh, gosh, that, you know, might not have been our best decision going all green on this, that, and the other. I think it's incredibly expensive and doesn't actually accomplish what they want. Nobody seems to be concerned that eventually the news gets so tight that it just strangles them out.
Well, you know, the fun thing about Apple is that it's been a leader in this part of consumer advertising. Hey, look, we're green. We're entirely carbon neutral. Our whole company produces zero carbon emissions, which is absolutely 100% true. Apple Corporation is a zero carbon company, and they can proudly brag about that when they sell their products. Catch is that the overwhelming majority of the energy used to design, create, manufacture, and distribute Apple products is not used by Apple, but is used by the contractors that they hire that are based in Taiwan and the People's Republic of China, which either are not green or lie about it, and for the most part are using coal to create the Apple products. So Apple has this basically greenwashing scam going where it is, in fact, the greenest company in the country, but that has nothing to do with their products.
Right.
And I like the greenwashing.
Yeah, that would explain why, in spite of what's going on with the CCP and the public perception of you know, China's big and bad and blah blah blah, has very little impact on Apple.
Apple doesn't really care. No, people are really hooked on that. I hate them too. Wouldn't darken their door either. I'm kind of a hater.
Yeah,
it's Sunday. I can confess.
They give you reason though for it.
They have always from the very beginning. First of all, they had little pictures on their phone, and I thought, you know, I'm not five. I'd like words, please. don't make me operate a device with little pictures. That just irritated me to the core. It still makes me angry just thinking about it. That's sad. Okay, we have to take a really quick break, not because of my anger issues.
Yeah, I'll calm her down on the break.
I don't have any mean songs about Apple, or I'd play them right now, just pretend. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
No, there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no
for good.
There, I knew I'd find a song for Apple. Oh, Stephen. So there seems to be no way out of this. Is that kind of true, or are we just going through the darkness?
I'm sorry?
I said, or are we just going through a dark time?
Well, I think, yes, we are going through a dark time. And, in fact, it's much darker than I thought it would be, in large part because either President Biden or those who are pulling the strings behind the curtain have been very aggressive about politicizing the financial bureaucracy, particularly the SEC and the Federal Reserve, that had traditionally been acknowledged by both parties to be beyond politics. And so I'm very concerned about that. But at the same time, I do think that there are ways around this, and that there are ways to push back. There's a long-term strategy. In the book, I talk about how a lot of this is the result of the cultural left's very aggressive, century-long attempt to take the institutions, and we have to take them back. So that will take several years and decades, but I think it can be done. And the short-term strategy, I think, is to take back what is ours. And by that, I mean when we spend our consumer dollars, expect the company to understand what we're upset about if they do something wrong. Call customer service. Call them and complain. Say, hey, look, I'm buying this, but I want you to understand, you know, record this and send it to your supervisor. I want you to understand that I'm offended by X, Y, and Z. Likewise, in investing, take back what is yours. Take back control of your shareholder rights if that's possible. If it's not invested in a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund, and if it is invested in those kinds of funds, move it to a manager who will at least take some sort of input from you rather than simply invest it based on your beliefs or on their political beliefs, pardon me. And so there are ways to push back. Engagement, engagement, engagement. If customer service hates getting calls from people complaining, I can guarantee you investor relations hates it more. Show up to the virtual annual general meetings of companies, ask questions, make it difficult for them. I think if we do this type of thing, as I said, to reverse engineer what the left has done and to be squeaky, maybe even squeakier than they have been, then I think that we can make some headway at least.
That's good. Outlook on it. I mean, it isn't just wait till the tide changes. Do you ever deal with CalPERS?
I know CalPERS. I know how important they are. I know how infected with ESG and with wokeness.
Because they stopped investing in fossil fuels, firearms. I mean, it was a list of things that are all extraordinarily profitable. And, imagine that. Their portfolio went way down. And I thought, even for their investors, they're willing to take a hit just to... I mean, that seems odd to me. Are you seeing that a lot?
Well, you know, the funny thing about CalPERS is they made such a production of getting out of those companies, and yet we're still in... You know, I think it was at the time 371 companies that were connected to the Chinese government, including armament manufacturers in the Chinese government. So, CalPERS has,
so we just hate Smith & Wesson, but we don't hate...
Exactly. Yeah, they have different perspectives on what's politically correct here and what's politically correct across the Pacific Ocean. But... The investors in CalPERS are the taxpayers of California.
Right.
Your city's police pension is invested with CalPERS, and they're taking less, or they're getting less a return because of their moral beliefs, that difference is going to have to be made up either by the retirees who get shafted on their pension, or by the taxpayers who are going to have to make up the difference. So, CalPERS can preach all it wants, but, you know, there's no downside for the people at CalPERS so much as there's downside for everybody else in the state.
Is there
any ability to target like the CalPERS managers, like you were talking about earlier? I mean, is that something people can do?
I'm not sure how CalPERS is set up, but I would think that that's going to have to come from the legislature, probably, which makes it all the more difficult. I feel
never going to happen in California.
We're out here in the fully captured zone.
Yes. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, that is a black mark on the record. So what have we missed? What else can people look forward to in your book that we probably aren't hearing about?
Probably the most important thing to understand is that this trend of businesses involving themselves in politics, investors, large asset management firms involving themselves in politics, that this is specifically and intentionally anti-democratic. The first half of my book traces the history, and I just mentioned one history, the takeover of the institutions, but the other history starts in 1876 in Baltimore at the newly formed Johns Hopkins University, where Richard Ely, who's one of the godfathers of American progressivism, is a professor of political economics, and one of his students is Woodrow Wilson, one of the other godfathers of progressive progressivism. Together they formulate the idea that Americans are simply too selfish, too stupid, too poorly educated to govern themselves and need this guardian class, this professional ruling class to take care of them. And then that has been a guiding principle in American progressivism ever since. And so we've had a professional bureaucracy, and then they tried to manipulate the judiciary, and now they're trying to manipulate business to be a break against the will of the people. That's the thing to understand, is when these businesses get upset with Georgia, they're getting upset with the duly elected representatives and the duly elected governor of Georgia. They're saying, we don't believe in the way this country is supposed to function, because we don't trust the people, and we think the people are wrong, and we want to change that. The most important thing to remember is that this is anti-democratic, and this has been part of the ruling class, statist, leftist strategy in this country for 150 years.
That does make a lot of sense, though. It is, any time people rise up, well, we demonize them, for one, you know, they're... Same things that you listed. You know, they're uneducated, they're backward, whatever. And if they just understood the big picture, then they would be able to speak this language. But they can never connect the dots, and the only way they ever move their agenda down the field is with force.
Right.
So if it was great, I mean, people would want to do it, but they don't.
Right. Yeah, and that's the bureaucracy was designed in this country specifically to guide the will of the people. And then, as I said, they used the judiciary. You know, it was legislation by judicial fiat in this country for probably the 1950s to the 1990s. And now this is their next step in how they plan to step around the will of the people in order to get what they want, what they believe is necessary politically, but the people are not smart enough to vote for. So this is very, you know, very anti-democratic.
Right. Do you think the big money in politics today, obviously it's having an impact on our elections, but, you know, when these politicians get into office, they have to raise money to stay in office, and these are the folks that are kind of dictating the direction of things, which ultimately means the corporations are dictating the direction of things.
Yeah, as much as they contribute.
Yeah, because they don't want to lose that contribution.
Yeah, what are you hearing on the elected side? Are people
There have been a handful of positive reactions from elected representatives. In 2019, for example, when Disney and Universal and Paramount all got upset about George's abortion bill, Senator Cotton in Arkansas took notice and took to the floor of the Senate and gave a stemwinder of a speech, basically accusing them of trying to usurp the power of the people, which is, in fact, what they were doing. The problem is that the narrow focus of elected representatives tends to make it difficult to explain to them or to get them to focus on just how pervasive and how widespread and how many different facets there are to this infiltration of American business. It's not something that can be addressed really by somebody who's got to be as narrow and focused as a senator or a congressman or even a governor. It's going to take quite a bit of organization and push from regular investors and from regular consumers and voters.
Hmm. Yeah, I just think it just seems like every time you wake up, there's some other company that's jumped on the bandwagon with some dummy like Colin Kaepernick, and they've decided to make him their poster boy. Has that really worked out for them in your, since you've actually looked at it a lot more than the rest of us? It just seems like that would be not a benefit, but I guess it's got to be working or they'd quit doing it.
Yeah, well, I think that he's been so valuable to Nike, and it's allowed them to connect with a consumer. It's allowed them to solidify their connection with the millennial and Gen Z consumers, in that it essentially proves their non-conformist bona fides.
Right.
It makes them the real deal as far as they're concerned with woke politics.
Right. Well, they you know, these big companies have always kind of been in the bag on the progressive side. But it seems like lately they're much more vocal about it. Now they're coming out of the closet and really getting in everybody's face about their position, which really
they started out with
me.
You know, there are subtle things like animal crackers, you know. I mean, most of us that are old, we remember animal crackers, and they were in a little box and they had a string, and you know, the animals were like, it was like a little
train car with a cage.
Yeah, where the animals went to the zoo or the circus. And obviously, we don't have any of that anymore. Now they're out on the Serengeti.
They let them out of the circus.
Killed the circus. So that's gone. Now we got to put them out in the Serengeti. So animal crackers live in the Serengeti. But there's little stuff like that. It's kind of everywhere when you really start looking. So for people who think this is limited to Nike, I think you should take a look at your products.
Yeah, in the introduction of the book, I refer to this as the old cliche of the onion. When I started digging into this, I'd peel a layer, and I'd find another layer, and then I'd peel that layer and find another layer, and over and over and over again. It's so widespread and so ingrained and so it's just so pervasive. It's hard to get your head around it.
Hard to run away from it fast enough. So thank you so much for being on with us. We have run out of time, but I hope people will go get the book, The Dictatorship of Woke Capital. Author is Stephen Soukup, spelled S-O-U-K-U-P, and you can find all that info at wethepeopleradio.us.